Okay, good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone back. Though today's share in old time would be at 10 a.m. In new time, this is now called 9 o'clock. So thank you for coming. You know, we've talked about what would be if they keep, if they stop these daylight saving times hours. We gave a share in that last year and all the ramifications across the globe.
The Marco Rubio.
Today's share is entitled The Dentist, Basa B'chalav, and a Treif Pot. Now, that sounds like a list of clues. What exactly is the dentist, Basa B'chalav, and a Treif Pot? But before I go into the specific Shaila, in general, the concept of Basa B'chalav, which broadens to the idea of kashrus, is something that is kedai for people to review the halachas. You know, you get accustomed. You know, I don't see the mashgiach here, but you know, we have. You know, go to a restaurant, you buy products. Okay, so you rely on the national, the local kashrus agencies. But really, that's only good for those products. Or however good that is, and those restaurants, those institutions that have that kashrus. But within people's homes, kashrus is an issue that's up to them. You don't usually have a mashgiach coming into your home, and people have to be careful with the halachas of kashrus. You know, the most classic shayla, which is known for rabbanim to get, are kashrus shaylas. You know, and these things are very, very common. You mistakenly dipped a fleishik spoon into a milchik pot. You were cutting, instead of the power of knife, you used a fleishik knife. You had one thing in your oven, you didn't realize there was something else in your oven. There are so many instances which, even if you're in general paying attention, but things could go wrong in the kitchen. And it's not your wife's fault. Human nature. If the men were in the kitchen, it would be much worse. So thus, you know, kashrus is something which is, in general, we should be chazering, we should be reviewing crash courses on this. And really today's share is not as much on the topic itself, but I believe it's a good review and a good way to get into many different topics involving basic kashrus. So I would like to begin with a simple kashrus issue. Okay, a person, I remember I had a problem like this, first day hired a babysitter. My oldest child, first day the babysitter was in the house. Okay, so live in a nice little apartment. My wife showed this person around. The person was, quote unquote, observant Jewish woman. At that point, we were into having observant Jewish people watch our children until we saw what happens. But older lady. Anyway,
sorry, guys.
My wife comes home, first day of work, and she sees, that's interesting. Looks like the babysitter made herself a nice egg omelet in our fleishik pot. Day one. Nice cheese omelet in our fleishik pot. Fleishik frying pan. Now, that is a problem. Now, we could go into the issues, but let's assume that fleishik pot was used within 24 hours. She found it right there on the side. She throws in the eggs, she throws in the cheese, and she makes an omelet. That pot is now treif. To make matters worse, it was one of these new fancy pots we got, which the material of that pot is debatable, highly debatable, if you could ever kasher. Yes, that was the end of that pot.
Enamel.
Right. Yeah. So there we have You have a pot which is fleishiks. It's used one time for milchiks, but assuming that one time was within a 24-hour cycle from the usage of fleishiks, wasn't washed well in between, it was left there on the side. The babysitter was supposed to watch it. Wash it. That, she didn't do that either. That pot.
That'd be a bigger problem if you put it in the dishwasher. Everything else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It could have been worse. Yeah. That was the real problem why we didn't keep her. Yes.
This kid?
Huh? No. He was a pretty good baby. But anyway, Lamaisa, that is a classic case of trafing up a pot with bas mechalav. You can't use one pot within 24 hours. The understanding is the cheese, the flavor of the cheese goes into the pot. And if the pot already had the flavor of milk, a flavor of meat, that comes out of the pot at the time of cooking. So you're having flavor from the meat of the pot and injecting in it flavor of now cheese into the pot. So that makes your pot, bas mechalav, in classic terms, treif. And if that pot, you're able to kasha, great. Then it could survive once you go through the whole kashrus process. But if it could not be kashered, you're dunsky. You no longer have a kosher pot. It's over. Now, these things happen all the time. Like we said, you put the wrong spoon into your coffee cup. Right? I was giving a scenario the other day to the base medrash, to some of the guys, right? You take a spoon you use for chalant, somehow that ends up in your early morning coffee cup. Not a good idea. People are losing their appetite as we speak. But so there are many, many cases around one's home where they could get into serious kashrus issues. What I would like to discuss today is the following scenario, which probably applies to everyone in the room. Everyone in the room probably visited a dentist and probably at some point got the bad news. You have a cavity. We need to put in a filling. Or if you're younger, you think you didn't get one of those, they say your teeth are not straight, we need to put in braces. Or unfortunately, if it reaches the level, you'll need dentures.
You need a root canal.
Right? No, I'm not going into all the painful procedures.
My dentist never met a root canal that he did not
like. But what I'm talking about are dental implants, one type or the other. Think about that. I have a cavity, a nice metal cavity. I have a cap. I have braces. Even we could potentially talk about non-metal fillings. I have these items in my mouth. For breakfast, I have a nice, I don't do dark coffee, a nice milkshake of coffee. A few hours later, I brush my teeth when I woke up. I brush my teeth when I go to sleep. Nothing else in between. I had a nice cup of hot coffee with milk. I followed that lunch with a nice corned beef sandwich, hot brisket sandwich. I'm a yucky, and just to add on to the case, I had a cheese pizza for dinner, and I could have another fleishiks. Within 24 hours, you could go milchiks, fleishiks. You could get it all in. Aren't your teeth, your fillings, your braces now treif? I told you, you only brush your teeth in the morning and before you go to bed. Nothing in between.
Huh?
Right? I'm using my mouth for milk because of inflation. Oh, you want to mess up your toothbrush too? Okay, good point. Right? I don't know exactly what the toothbrush gets on it, and with the toothpaste itself could be that itself is a cleanser. I'm not sure. But what I'm worried about, forget about your toothbrush. I'm worried about your fillings, your braces, all these, your implants and your dentures. All these things should be treif. Because just like your pot that has milchits and fleishiks, that's a problem of basa b'chalav, that's treif. So your mouth, if you intake hot fleishiks, hot milchiks, you waited your 6 hours. They were all kosher ingredients. The best shechita, the most kosher restaurant. It doesn't matter. If you had milchiks and fleishiks inside your mouth, that should be a problem.
Right.
No?
You need to gargle with boiling water. Start with a pogo too, just to be clear.
Did your dentist ever warn you when he gave you a filling that watch out, right? To do what you want, to blow dry, blow torch your mouth in between fleishiks and milchiks, right? Did your dentist try to sell you two sets of dentures? One for milchiks, one for fleishiks? There is some rumor of a Hasidish Rebbe that had three sets of dentures. Milchiks, fleishiks, and the third for Pesach. Right, Pesach is true. Right. It was a good dentist. He could have sold them four.
Is it just a part of your mouth?
Huh?
The filling isn't looked at as like a utensil, it's looked at as a part of you, so it can.
But it's the metal part of you. And if it's really, you know, good thick, you might even blink when you go through the TSA. But probably not. Huh? Water does not, if my pot is treif, my pot has milk in it, and then I put water in it, and then maybe we could talk about boiling water, but that won't help within 24 hours.
You have all your teeth, no fillings. You have a steak, a little piece of meat steak in your tooth, and then you have milk 6 hours later.
Excellent question, right? Josh, this happened to you last week. Harvey just brought up, you go out to eat, you have a nice steak for lunch. You come home, your wife serves you milchiks. But between the little gap in your teeth, which you should have gotten braces, but between the little gap in your teeth, there's a little piece of meat, and now you're eating milchiks. That is not a good thing.
What about the acid in your
mouth? Excellent point. We'll get to the acid. Right? Excellent point. So what we're bringing up is seemingly there should be an issue that we are all eating treif. It's a great quiz, Kasha. How do you keep, you only go to the best restaurants, the best hechsherim, you mamish never eat outside of your own kitchen, but yet your mouth, you're treif, you're eating treif. According to my question, the reason is because if you eat meat and you eat milk, hot meat, hot milk, within implants in your mouth, those implants should be problematic.
You're saying natural teeth are not a problem.
Oh, I'll get to it in a moment. Natural teeth are not a problem. That is true. We'll have to see why. So what do we say? Now, I didn't make up this question myself. This question is actually found in quite a bit of rabbinic literature, and I have to give the first disclaimer. Do not blame your dentist. Even if you leave shir at this point, you should know you're okay. In terms of regular daily life, we'll talk later about Pesach, but in terms of regular daily life, aside from some rumors of a couple of Hasidic Rebbes, nobody is makbid in this. Nobody views this as a problem. They all view that we have halachic answers to my question. So rest assured, we haven't been eating treif our whole lives. Our teeth haven't making everything treif. Not true. why it's not true, we're going to go through today. But it's a good question. It's an interesting question, definitely thought-provoking. But it will not, the answer is not going to be that you need to get a separate set of dentures. Now, Harvey, your question, though, people should be careful, and that alone is the reason maybe to brush your teeth or floss, is if you do have pieces of meat stuck between teeth, that is an issue, and a person should try to, take care of that. You know, it could be an issue for having milk and meat together. It could be an issue for when the clock stops for your phylliac eating. If you still have that in your teeth and somehow it gets wedged out and you swallow that, that could potentially restart the clock. That's a different topic. That's not what we're talking about today. Now, in terms of today, I will give you 3, 4, 5 potential heterim, a couple of which already the paths were mentioned by people over here. I'd like to go through them. The ideas behind the potential heterim, maybe the weak points, the questions on such an idea, and we'll go through straight different ideas within kashrus, and this alone, I think, is a very good chazara of many halachas of kashrus. Now, the first suggestion put forth, why we don't have to be worried about our implants, things in our teeth being treif, is by the Maharsham. The Maharsham, it's on the top of your pages, talks about the following idea. In order for taste to transfer, there has to be heat. Two cold things is not a big deal. Technically speaking, but if you're eating ice cream on one side of the table and the other one's eating cold piece of meat on the other side of the table, that's not a situation we're really worried about taste transfer. If you have two cold things, you're allowed to put, if the person in the kosher supermarket gives you your kosher meat and your kosher cheese, besides the fact it's in packages, but they put it in the same bag, which usually the baggers are told that's like the worst stuff they could ever do. They're going to get fired if they put the milk and the meat in the same bag. But two cold things is not a big deal. We don't assume this transfer between cold things. You want to say greases and other oils, okay, that's a different story. But it's in packages. Two cold things you don't have to be worried about. In order for there to be issues of let's say, basar b'chalav, transfer of taste, the objects have to be yatsa lettuce bowl. They have to be piping hot. The only time taste transfers, this is a physical reality, is when things are hot. So therefore, some would like to suggest that if something is going into your mouth, it's not yatsa lettuce bowl. And therefore, if we're dealing with an issue of cooking in a pot, so yeah, when I cooked my meat in the pot, the meat was yatsa lettuce bowl. When the babysitter cooked the egg, the cheese omelet, it was yatsa lettuce bowl. So that's why we have a problem. We have a transfer of taste of milk and meat because it's piping hot. But when you put something in your mouth, Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that we don't put piping hot things in our mouth, which are yatsa lettuce. And therefore, there was no heat there to transfer the milk to meat. And therefore, everything in your mouth is kosher. Says Rav Moshe, right. Says, they bring the Isser v'Heter. Multiple Svarim bring this argument. If your mouth is not piping hot, your mouth is not going to eat, your mouth by nature, person's not going to have something that's yatsa lettuce bowl. Literally, yatsa lettuce bowl means something that your hand would be scalded, would be burnt by it. You're not going to put something that hot into your mouth. And if you're not going to put something that hot into your mouth, so you're never going to get, you're not having super hot milk, super hot meat inside your mouth. You wait till it cools down. That is an argument that multiple people say to matter our issue. However, there are those that question such an idea. And they say, well, first of all, I don't know, some people do like things very hot, right? The same way, you know, I don't know if it's a good comparison, but the same way, you know, we have a lot of Spanish Americans over here. You know, they like their chili, you know, super hot, right? They take things, they like it hot. So that's in terms of the sharpness of the taste. But maybe there are some people that can handle super hot things. Every palate's different. People have different tastes. Maybe some people could handle it. Now, it's a bad comparison. I don't know. That's on the flavoring of a food. This is on literally is your mouth getting burnt. But I definitely did see some poskim talk about even the shear of Yatzel Espo. Some people say is only 104 degrees Fahrenheit, which is not so hot. And the person probably could take that in their mouth. So if you assume Yatzel Espo isn't the highest shear, we're not talking about something 150, 200 degrees. We're talking something 104 degrees. So some people could manage that in their mouth. So something like that, then there would be taste transfer. So this is one potential answer that people say, but it has a weakness. It's not so simple. Yes?
Most coffee makers are somewhere between, I mean, Keurigs are between like 182 and 191 or something.
Wow.
Coolest, I think, may go is about 182-ish. A lot of other coffee makers might go as low as 160, but that's still coffee, and that's still plenty below boiling.
Do people have hot coffee straight out of the Keurig? What do you think?
I drink black coffee.
No, so,
by the time it comes down in,
102?
It's but not past, not below 120 or 130, not any chance.
So this is...
I would ask the question of the pizza that's coming right out of the oven to the table.
Right.
A tremendous amount of people will actually go directly for it.
Right. No, even though sometimes it burns the top of your mouth.
And that cheese does burn.
Right.
The
mouth, right. Right. So this is very interesting. What's bringing, say for our home audience, people bringing up, number one, that many coffee makers are set at 180 and above degrees, huh? Some below. But they're set up pretty hot, and yet people do have coffee. Others talk about hot cheese on a pizza. People eat, you know, the best time to have a pizza slice is not after it's sitting in the box there, as we all know, for a couple hours and to eat it, right? You'd like the pizza fresh, hot, out of the oven. You're eating hot pizza cheese, that's pretty hot. So if we're assuming people are eating hot foods, that brings us right back to our question. Okay, so then we should have issues of milk and meat going into our mouth, going into our cavities, our dental work. So that's potential heter number one. Potential heter number two, it's an idea of a kli sheni, or kli rishon. A pot in the fire, that's what we define as a classic kli rishon. That's a kli rishon al esh, even after you take it off the fire, we assume it's still very, very hot. Kli rishon shalal esh. But a kli rishon in halakhic terms, that cooks. Once you start going beyond kli rishons, you have a kli sheni, you have a kli shlishi, right? You take the thing out of the pot, you put it into a serving bowl. You take it out of the serving bowl, you put it into your bowl. The ladle could count as a pot, as another kli. So when you deal with things removed, even if many times it's piping, it still looks pretty hot, in halachic terms, the further distance you have from a kli rishon, halakhically, we don't consider that thing to be cooking. And therefore, many things that a person puts into his mouth, he's putting to his mouth after it already is beyond a kli rishon. Your piping hot coffee goes into, okay, let's do the old coffee maker, right? Goes into that coffee pot, right? So that's your kli rishon. Then you're pouring into a cup.
Keurig, you go directly into the cup. Is that
right,
the
right. A Keurig is a little trickier. But let's do the start with the old coffee cup.
Yeah, like a Mr. Coffee
machine. Mr. Coffee machine.
Yeah.
So the coffee goes into that coffee pot.
Right.
Then you're pouring from the pot into your cup. And then you're pouring from your cup into your mouth. That's an Iroi Kli Sheni. Well, not it's a Kli, but now what's the status of the, once the thing really comes out of the cup, it's already another level. It's not, I don't know, it's really coming out. You're not pouring out like that, the stream, I don't know. Huh? Very interesting idea. Right.
Except the
water goes through the pot first.
Right. The cake, except that when it goes into the pot on a regular coffee machine, it's also on a heat source to keep it at that temperature.
So this is very interesting. What people are bringing up is how you know the Keurig company is quite popular. So there, you're really putting your cup under the machine. So is your cup a Kli Rishon? So people are fighting back that no, really, you should view it. The machine itself is the Kli Rishon. Your cup seemingly is only a Kli Sheni. Great. So once we already have things beyond the Kli Rishon, and then it's going into your mouth, so that means this milchik of coffee is not having the ultimate heat, which we view in the Kli Rishon. It's only in the Kli Sheni. So in terms of transferring taste, milchiks and fleishiks into your mouth, yeah, you know, that's harder to say. Now the cheese pizza, yeah, that's okay. Right, you put it on the plate. So we're gonna the oven is a Kli Rishon. We're gonna say the pizza stick is a Kli Sheni.
No, because
right?
A lot of them will still be on the
right.
Plate
the plate in the restaurant when they cut up their pizza is a Kli Shlishi. By you is a Kli Revi.
Does that apply to solid?
I'm about to get to that. Hold on, excellent point. So some want to argue that you could matter the meat and milk in your mouth because most of the things are coming into the surface of your mouth to your teeth only after multiple transfers to multiple different utensils. So that would limit halakhically the status of the heat, right? Even if you put a thermometer there and you say, oh, it still looks the same, but halakhically, for the most part, right? You say that limits the status, and therefore you don't have cooking. You know, not cooking milk and meat. So that is another potential heter out there. But Ed, you know who asked your question? Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. But it's quite fascinating. If you look in the middle of your sheets, this particular point I left out. It's the next paragraph in Rav Shlomo Zalman. But I think the shayla itself is so cool. In 1936, Tough Race Sadi Vav, a young kolel, younger man in Eretz Yisrael, decided, he was an unknown, he decided to do two things. Number one, he wrote a sefer on electricity, which is an absolutely groundbreaking topic, groundbreaking sefer in 1936 to be written. So he sent that sefer over for Haskama, but he also had a pressing halachic question, which was bothering him, which was dealing with the fact he had dental work. And he was worried, we'll see, not about during the year, but he was worrying about for Pesach. So this young Talmudic scholar sent these two things, his new groundbreaking work on electricity and this personal shaila that he had to the Gadol Ador, the Chazon Ish, for an answer. The Chazon Ish emphatically gave a tremendous haskama to his sefer, and that sefer put him on the map. That's how the first step, how Shlomo Zalman Orbach became a household name. It's interesting, in terms of this particular shaila, the Chazon Ish never responded. And one of his nephews said he didn't respond, there's nothing to respond. What he wrote about this topic was perfect. I don't know why I didn't tell him that. But he just had a question. You know, what should I do? And he goes through all the halakha things, and he comes to a conclusion. The Chazon Ish says, there's nothing to write, it's perfect. Interesting. But the Chazon Ish talks about this heter of not being in a Kli Rishon, a Kli Sheni, but he brings up the point that was raised that only applies to liquid foods or mixes. But something which is a dover gush, and it's very cute in the tshuva, that part I didn't put on, but he talks about lakshin kugel. He writes there in the tshuva, lakshin kugel, right? I guess in those days in Eretz Yisrael, he should have written Yerushalmi kugel, but maybe because the Chazon Ish was in the Bnei Brak, you know, he didn't want to rub it in. Huh? He wrote kugel. It was not Hasidish. He said kugel.
He was Litvish.
So Rav Shlomo Zalman asked about Lakshin Kugel. So, yeah, Rav Shlomo Zalman argues that a Dover Gush, we say, retains the heat. Since it's a solid, it retains the heat, even in a cliche. So therefore, in that case, you should be worried about taste transfer. So if you're by a Dover Gush, we still don't have an answer. The first answer, Yatzalazbo, some people accept, others question. In terms of klisheni, there's a weakness in that answer when it comes to the dover gush. So it's still stuck. Why are our teeth treif? Why aren't our teeth treif? So I'll bring up another big area. In order for taste to transfer, so we said you need ingredients, right? You need the milk, you need the meat, you need the heat. Let's assume you have all those. There's a major other factors is that there are things which are no same tam lefkam. There are factors which give off a negative taste. The only time we're worried about a taste transfer is when it's a positive good taste. For example, right? You know, we're from Jews, we don't eat it, but we could understand that cheese could add to a burger. The taste of milk could be a positive influence on the taste of meat. You know, the taste of meat could help out your cheese omelet, right? Milk and meat, those tastes are positive tastes, which one helps out the other. But where a taste is a negative taste, so there's no problem of basa b'chalav. It's only where there's a positive taste, not where there's a negative taste. So for example, the assumption is that after 24 hours, a taste goes bad. It's a bad taste. There's no sin tam lefkam. And that's one of the most classic ways to matter something. So Lui Tzur, there was a gap of 24 hours from the milk and the meat. So then it's not a positive taste of milk and meat. There's a negative there. So that would not aser. Similarly, was brought up, let's say you would wash it. It was within 24 hours. But you washed it with detergent. Detergent, the whole point of detergent is to clean and to cleanse it. And it's not giving off a positive taste. It's giving off practically a negative taste. Nobody eats detergent, right? If you ever have, you know, you have a bowl, you use something right after it was washed, right? It's like, your cereal doesn't taste good when, you know, cereal, milk, and detergent. Not a good taste. So detergent would be, if it was washed, that would be that. Similarly, people say, and this was brought up before, within one's mouth, there are enzymes. There are toxic, yucky tastes, right? That's why you get scope for bad breath, right? There's bad flavors within a person's mouth. So therefore, really, buy a pot. A pot's fine. I put milk in there. I put fleishlix in there. Within 24 hours, hot taste transfers, you have a problem. But if the pot is your mouth, so granted, right, you have the metal, you have this, but you also have your mouth cavity, which reeks, which has these different enzymes. So that will be nosin tam lefgam, and that's a reason to matter. I saw Rabbi Yoshev uses this as a reason, and this, the chura, there's no weakness in it, right? Even if, maybe you would say you were born with good breath, but I don't know. Over time, there's lots of different things you eat, and mixtures and all that, there is sufficient reason to think, right, that you would not want to eat such a thing once something is in your mouth. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Yes.
Here,
additionally, there is an idea that in order for taste transfer to work, it has to be that it's there for a significant amount of time. This is a very important heter in general for milk and meat. A lot of times, right? Everyone should tell this to their wives. A lot of times what happens, your wife has a shail in the kitchen, and she knows from crime scenes that you're not supposed to touch the crime scene. Right, Alan? You're supposed to leave the crime scene exactly as is. Let the investigators come in and check it. So what happens? Your wife puts a milk thing in the front of this. Oh, my gosh, I did something wrong. She stops, waits for the husband to come down. We'll have to bring home the rabbi. We'll send pictures. Leave the crime scene as is. Halakhically, that's not a smart thing to do. If I would give you the simplest etza for a lot of things, if you ever dip the wrong thing into a pot, you know what you should do?
Take it
right out. Because in Shulchan Aruch, it brings, as a Piskei Tshuva, brings a Chamudei Daniel, that if something's only there for, you know, a matter of seconds, it's like in yeshiva, you say the 3-second rule. Something falls on the floor. Right? If it's only there for a matter of moments, you take it back out, you're good to go. Huh? Yeah, you should wash it. But either way. But the pshat is, there's no taste. Cold water. Right? The pshat is your bathroom sink, okay? Go to your bathroom. But the main thing is you took it out. It doesn't matter to wash it, per se. But the idea is it takes some time for taste to transfer. So some people piggyback that idea over here. When something's going in your mouth, unless it's something very chewy. Chewy would be the attack on such a thing here. But most things that go in your mouth, they go in your mouth and down your throat pretty quickly. So it's not really remaining. And what are the odds of sitting on that spot of your mouth with the denture, with the teeth, you know, the whole time? Usually it's moving around your mouth in one moment, out the other. And it's not enough sufficient time for the taste to get in there. Okay? That's another potential heter. Definitely for meat that you have to chew for a while. Okay, yeah, that wouldn't apply. Now, this is all during the year. Regular bas mechalav. On Pesach, though, many people are more machmer. Right? On Pesach, people are more machmer. And there's sufficient reason. Hilchas Pesach are more machmer in general than just regular bas mechalav. There is such a thing that Pesach is more machmer. And thus, there are different shitas. There are some shitas, if you have dentures, there are some shitas that you should pour boiling hot water over your dentures before Pesach. Again, if you don't have a separate set for Pesach, you should pour hot water on your dentures. That is one idea that the poskim say. However, the other poskim say you don't have to do that, but they do say the following. And this is important. Because, like I saw, for example, on the bottom of the sheets, of Yaakov Kamenetsky was quite machmer about this. Is one should not eat within 24 hours of the Zman Isser hot chametz. And the rationale behind that is because hot chametz would be an issue of being in your mouth and getting on your braces, your fillings, and all that. And you're going to have that chametz issue. So it's best within 24 hours before Pesach not to have hot chametz. Rabbi Yaakov actually adds not only hot chametz, but also sharp chametz. Something which is sharp, a sharp spice, also stays in one's mouth longer. There's another idea. Talks about. Because something sharp by itself doesn't do it. But if you add something sharp that, you know, you cut, you know, an onion with a knife.
Yeah.
So those two factors together, something sharp together with the pressure of cutting with a knife, bring out the flavor, we say, even longer than 24 hours. Now, the interesting, Rabbi Yaakov seems to say this too, are nervous that just like we say a knife has this cutting motion, which will bring out flavor, one's teeth also have that same type of thing. It's like a knife that could bring, through the cutting, brings out, cutting plus a sharp food, brings out the taste which is in that item even beyond 24 hours. So thus, one shouldn't eat hot chametz to make new problems, or B, to have any sharp foods, because combined with the biting of your teeth, that could bring out even old chametz alive again, those tastes, and therefore that would be a problem coming into Pesach.
You think
so basically you should fast on Erev Pesach, right? Or eat, eat potatoes, not onions,
yeah.
Not chametz. Yeah.
It's 24 hours before this month, so it's for 2 days.
This is Manessa, you're right. Yeah. Okay, you'll be hungry for your matzah.
How does this all translate to braces?
Braces is all the same.
Because you can't take the braces out.
Correct. So by braces, the only eitzah you really have is Rabbi Yaakov, 24 hours, which others, many people say. Yeah, drinking hot water, and that's, yeah, depends if we say how hot you're going to drink. So it comes out from here. Hopefully we got a nice review, a nice around the world of kashrus within one's mouth, not within one's kitchen or restaurant. But all these things, it's an interesting, thought-provoking question. Next time, right? You have someone in the chair, you're giving them braces for the first time. They could pose, oh, now that I'm giving you braces, do you think you're going to have issues of basal mechalov? Interesting, thought-provoking idea to bring up, but there are definitely heterim, and the world definitely allows for people to live normally. You know, once I'll bring up one fascinating last story, one fascinating last heter that I left out by mistake. There are those that argue that the way these dental implants are made, there's absolutely no holes in it. It's not porous. And something which has no holes, there's no taste transfer. It's only within pots, because within the molecules there is some degree of a hole, so there's taste transfer. But if you have something super solid, there's no taste transfer. That's the answer for why our teeth don't have a problem, because it's not getting absorbed in the first place. It's only within pots where there is some degree of holes, so there's taste transfer. Now, people try to argue, stainless steel is perfect. There is no holes. So I saw two fascinating stories. Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz is the posek, now the Rosh Yeshiva, of Yeshivas Eish HaTorah. And, you know, Bali Tshuva, a lot of times, have a lot to add to the firm world. So one time he was giving a kashrus share, and inside the share, he had a guy, college, he was a professor of taste transfers, right? He would know, you know, companies when they would make. He studied for life the idea of taste transfers.
Yeah,
food scientist.
Yeah.
I never knew you could go to college and become a food scientist, but this is what this guy did. Oh, yeah. He studied the molecules of food and this and taste transfers, and he says 100% legit. You know that, you know, foods come and add this one's with that one and this. 100% is an idea of food transfer. Similarly, Rabbi Berkowitz also had a story. One time they were talking about this type of shayla. So one of the guys had a connection in the university and called the chief scientist of a dental implant company and hocked him on the dental implants. And this person, okay, there he's standing up for his company, was saying, "This our fillings, there is absolutely no, it's no, not porous, no holes. Don't forget, if there are holes, you could get decay, you could get issues." And he says, "Our dental equipment is all perfect. Nothing will get in there in the first place." What are they putting in there? So if they're just putting in metal and they're putting in, you know, putting in other things, good question. But I think we see from these stories, it's a beautiful thing, is really understanding halacha. You need a full gamut of knowledge, and it's interesting when you have the food scientist and the chief scientist of dental implants all there just confirming what the great Rabbanim knew in the Shulchan Aruch of the ideas of taste transfer. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. May all be lucky.